Beauty sleep is real. We don't call it beauty sleep for nothing. The body intuitively knows that sleep deprivation, especially when it's chronic, will do a number on one's appearance. More dark circles, more redness and inflammation, more fine lines and wrinkles, and an overall dehydrated complexion. Sleep deprivation is now well documented as a factor in all manner of disease. Sleep quality indeed affects skin function and health. And surprisingly, your sleep and your microbiome have a lot in common. The field of sleep medicine barely existed when I was in training, but today it's a well-respected area of study that continues to demonstrate that the amount and quality of sleep you get have an astonishing impact on every system in your body. Sleep is not a state of inactivity or a zone in which your body momentarily presses the pause button. It is a necessary phase of profound regeneration. Indeed, billions of molecular tasks at the cellular level go on during sleep to ensure that you can live another day. From laboratory and clinical studies to entire books, much research has been devoted to sleep's sweeping role in our lives. Sufficient sleep keeps you creative, sharp, productive, and able to process information quickly. Your sleep affects how hungry you feel, how much you eat, how efficiently you metabolize your food, how strong your immune system is, how insightful you can be, how well you cope with stress, and how well you remember things. Sleeping for a longer or shorter time than what your body needs, for most people, this is between 7 and 9 hours in a 24-hour period, has been shown to be associated with a spectrum of health challenges, from cardiovascular disease and diabetes to automobile and workplace accidents, learning and memory problems, weight gain, and yes, skin disorders. It helps to think of sleep as food and water for your skin. If you don't get enough of it, you deprive your skin of needed nourishment and hydration. Chronic sleep deprivation has a multitude of effects internally, mostly on our hormones, that result in visible consequences to the skin. Put simply, imbalances in the body will lead to imbalances in the skin. The body's cells regenerate during sleep. So when you don't get enough sleep, cellular turnover, including the skin's, comes to a halt, and you're left with a dull, compromised appearance. Moreover, sleep deprivation affects the skin's natural barrier function and can lead to dryness and increased sensitivity to irritation. What makes sleep so important for your skin health has everything to do with its role in one particular biological phenomenon, circadian rhythms. We all have an internal biological clock defined by the pattern of recurring activities associated with the cycles of daylight and darkness. These are rhythms that cycle through repeatedly, roughly every single day, and they include our sleep-wake cycle and the rise and fall of hormone levels and body temperature. When your rhythm is not synchronized properly with your body's expected day-night pattern, you won't feel like yourself. Something will seem off. If you've traveled across time zones and experienced jet lag, or pulled an all-nighter, then you know, probably painfully well, what it means to have a disrupted circadian rhythm. The thing to remember is that your circadian rhythm revolves around your sleep habits. In fact, a healthy rhythm results in normal patterns of hormonal secretions from those associated with stress and cellular recovery, and renewal to hunger cues that tell you when to eat. Our chief appetite hormones, leptin and ghrelin, for example, orchestrate the stop and go of our eating patterns. Ghrelin tells us we need to eat, and leptin says we've had enough. Recent science that has put these digestive hormones in the spotlight is breathtaking. We now have data demonstrating that inadequate sleep creates an imbalance of both hormones, which in turn adversely affects hunger and appetite. In one well-cited study, when people were instructed to sleep 4 hours a night for 2 consecutive nights, they experienced a 24% increase in hunger and gravitated toward high-calorie treats, salty snacks, and starchy foods. This is probably attributable to the body's search for a quick energy fix, which is all too easy to find in processed, refined carbs. Cortisol should peak in the morning and wane throughout the day. Levels of this stress and immune-regulating hormone should be lowest after 11 p.m., when melatonin levels tend to go up. The pineal gland secretes melatonin, a potent antioxidant hormone that signals sleep. For millions of years, it has alerted the human brain that it's dark outside, ultimately helping to regulate our circadian rhythm. Upon the release of melatonin, the body begins to slow down, lowering blood pressure and core body temperature, which helps induce sleepiness. Now here's where the latest research has gotten wild. There's a newfound connection between your microbiome and your circadian rhythm. An expanding body of research suggests that the friendly microbes in the gut may in fact be responsible for regulating our circadian rhythms. How so? Well, it turns out that our gut microbes have a routine too. Like clockwork, they begin their day in one part of the intestinal lining, but then move a few micrometers in other directions before returning to their original position. New research in mice shows that the regular timing of these small movements can influence our circadian rhythms by exposing gut tissue to a variety of microbes and their metabolites as the day goes by. Disruption of this dance can affect us. Two phases dominate sleep, the non-rapid eye movement, NREM, and rapid eye movement, REM, periods. NREM sleep, in turn, is divided into three stages, the first two of which are referred to as light sleep, and the third of which brings us into slow wave, delta, sleep, the most restorative kind. Finally, we hit REM sleep, deep sleep, during which we dream. We progress from wakefulness to NREM sleep to REM sleep in repeated patterns throughout the night, with REM stages usually getting longer as the night goes by. A restful sleep will progress through 4 to 6 cycles of sleep without wakefulness between cycles, each cycle lasting between 80 and 110 minutes. Multiple studies demonstrate that sleep informs inflammatory signaling and that lost sleep results in daytime inflammation, which in turn affects your immunity. If you've ever noticed that you get sick more often when you're sleep deprived, now you know why. Sleep disruption can leave you more vulnerable to infection, among other problems. Chronic inflammation can also manifest itself in skin disorders. And you know what persistently high levels of cortisol will do. Break down collagen. Not a good thing for your skin. Now that you appreciate sleep's role in optimal functioning, which in turn factors into skin health, let's talk about how you can maximize your experience of sleep and free yourself from insomnia, a condition that 25% of Americans suffer from. I'll outline some advice, and in Chapter 10, you'll see how this fits into your custom program. In Week 2, you'll be focusing on sleep habits. By then, you will have already made changes to your diet that will support restful sleep. Stick to your number every single night. Everyone has different sleep needs. You probably know yours from experience. It doesn't take a technical sleep study to find out how many hours you need to feel refreshed upon waking and productive throughout the day without needing caffeine every few hours. Be strict about going to bed and getting up at the same time daily, 365 days a year. Despite what many people might believe, shifting your sleep habits on the weekends to catch up can sabotage a healthy circadian rhythm. It's better for you to capture that early night slow wave sleep by making sure you're in bed before midnight. Act like a kid at bedtime. Anyone who has kids knows that their pre-bedtime routine is ritualized. And for good reason. Like Pavlovian conditioning, it prepares kids' minds and bodies for sleep. Similarly, you should set aside at least 30 minutes before bedtime so you can send cues to your body and tell it to get ready for sleep. Disconnect from stimulating activities, for example, work, being on the computer, looking at your cell phone. Take a warm bath, listen to soothing music, or read. Do some deep breathing exercises before lying down. Limit blue light from electronics. Power gadgets down near bedtime or minimize blue light from screens by activating the night shift mode on tablets and smartphones. Most natural or artificial light contains a blue wavelength that interferes with melatonin production and stimulates the alert centers in the brain, keeping us awake. You may want to go the distance with this one and keep all electronic screens outside your bedroom. In 2015, neuroscientist Anne Marie Chang and her colleagues showed that light-emitting devices impaired sleep and disrupted circadian rhythms. Further, these effects extended beyond evening and into the following morning. Keep it cool, dark, and clean. The ideal temperature for sleeping is between 60 and 67 degrees Fahrenheit. Use a sleep mask or blackout shades. Try a sound machine too if you like. Bedrooms should be kept clean and tidy. Clutter will stress you out. Mind other sleep thieves. Drugs, including coffee and alcohol, do indeed affect sleep. It can take time for the body to process caffeine, so try to have a 2 p.m. cutoff time for caffeinated drinks if you have difficulty sleeping. Alcohol is a mixed bag with respect to sleep. While alcohol can make you feel sleepy, its effects on the body disrupt normal sleep cycles, particularly the restorative slow-wave sleep phase. Pharmaceuticals, whether over-the-counter or prescribed, can contain ingredients that affect sleep. For example, many headache remedies contain caffeine. Some cold remedies can have stimulating decongestants, for example, pseudoephedrine, which is chemically related to adrenaline. Side effects of many commonly used drugs can also affect sleep. Be aware of what you are taking, and if they are necessary medicines, ask if you can take them earlier in the day, when they will have less of an effect upon your rest. Reset your internal clock with early morning light. Satchidananda Panda, a professor in the Regulatory Biology Laboratory at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in La Jolla, California, has conducted a lot of research into the circadian clock, especially as it relates to our genes, microbiomes, eating patterns, risk for weight gain, and even immune systems. One of his most important discoveries has been that light sensors in the eyes work in conjunction with the hypothalamus to keep our bodies on schedule. As you might recall, the hypothalamus is the part of the brain that links the nervous and endocrine systems and regulates many of the autonomic functions of our bodies, particularly metabolism. The suprachiasmatic nuclei in the hypothalamus receive input directly from the light sensors in our retinas, which then triggers certain genes related to our body's clock. This is why exposure to early morning light helps reset our circadian rhythms. Getting out into the morning sun can help recalibrate your clock if you're not feeling refreshed from sleep or are chronically having trouble going to bed when you know you should. Consider a sleep study. If you have tried all of these approaches and still fail to get a good night's sleep, or if you find yourself relying on sleep aids for prolonged periods of time, you might want to consider undergoing a sleep study to rule out other issues, such as undiagnosed sleep apnea. Sleep apnea, which is very treatable, affects a whopping 22 million of us and is caused by a collapse of the airway during sleep. Muscles in the back of the throat fail to keep the airway open. This results in frequent but brief cessations of breathing, which cause sleep to be fragmented. Dreamless sleep and loud snoring are telltale signs of sleep apnea. Of course, undergoing a sleep study will require that you spend the night in a sleep lab that can monitor and record your sleep. These centers are not as unusual as you might think. Many hospitals, large and small, offer these services. The fact is that our bodies crave balance and regularity, from our sleep habits at night to our waking activities and patterns of eating and exercising during the day. When you exercise regularly, you trigger the relaxation response. And when you get a good night's sleep, you tip the beauty balance scales in your favor. Coming up, you'll learn more about how to schedule exercise, find time to meditate, or engage in another relaxation activity, and safeguard your sleep time. Chapter 8. Handle with care. Reassess your regimen and commit daily to proper skincare. Nothing is more thrilling for me than helping people look and feel their best and using what modern medicine has to offer to achieve these goals, especially when it comes to having beautiful, healthy skin. In addition to my childhood experiences, which I shared at the beginning of this book, there were other factors influencing my decision to become a doctor. Initially, I was attracted to the field of medicine because of my unusual household. My late father had been completely deaf since he was 3 years old. My mother, who has always been fascinated by the beauty of sign language, decided to enter a master's degree program at New York University that specializes in signing. Guess who lectured frequently at my mom's program? My spirited, charismatic father, who happened to be getting his PhD at NYU at the same time. That is where they met. As a couple, they supported each other's dream to bring the conversation about disabilities into the mainstream and to show the world the value of the person behind a disability. My father became a disabilities rights leader, and my mom was first a teacher of the deaf and later a sign language therapist for children with special needs. Our family friends were an eclectic and incredibly fun group of special needs and mainstream kids and parents. It didn't take much effort for me to look past a disability to the person inside. Fast forward to today, my personal background fuels my unique perspective as a dermatologist. My ability to empower others through my work energizes and motivates me every day. Treatment can be transformative for my patients, not just physically, as their skin improves, but also emotionally, mentally, and even professionally. And I love it as much as they do. In medical school, we students were able to spend what little free time we had shadowing experts in various fields so we could get a taste of what kind of medicine we might want to specialize in. As you can probably guess, I spent a lot of time in the dermatology department and was especially drawn to what was then called the Acne Clinic at the University of Pennsylvania. While shadowing a mentor in this clinic, I met people with severe acne. Some developed disfiguring scars from their lesions, and many more developed emotional scars. But as their skin cleared up, witnessing the evolution in their personalities and their growth and confidence had an impact on me. Teenagers, who initially hid behind baseball caps and endless layers of bangs, reluctant to make eye contact, would transform over the course of their treatments. They would come out of their shells, start dating, go out for sports teams or the school play, and perform better in their academic pursuits. I was moved and touched by these experiences. No other field offered anything like it. Then, marrying my love of microbiology and my immersion in scientific discoveries about the human microbiome, I became obsessed with studying the microbiome's influence on skin and applying that knowledge to my work. The top two goals in treating your skin correctly should be to maintain its natural microbiome while giving it what it needs to stay healthy and youthful, despite chronological and environmental aging. In Chapter 4, you heard about the science behind skincare as it relates to new developments about the microbiome. Here, I'll give you my rules of the skincare road, which will help you establish a routine. I'll present the specific daily morning and evening to-do lists in Chapter 10, along with the program outline. The goal in this chapter is to give you a foundation for proper skincare, providing the information you need when you're searching for products or using at-home treatments. Included will be a conversation about proper exfoliation and experimenting with ingredients such as retinoids, which are famously known to remedy a slew of skin problems during every decade in adulthood. Because of the volume of information in this chapter, I recommend listening through it carefully before planning your new daily, weekly, and monthly regimens. Then use this chapter's information in tandem with the morning and evening protocol described in Chapter 10. One fact to keep in mind is that each of our microbiomes is totally unique. They're like fingerprints. No two people have the same microbial communities. Although we are stuck with a certain genetic predisposition to skin disorders, our microbiomes are largely environmental. Their health and composition have a lot to do with our habits and surroundings. It's like a twist on the classic nature versus nurture relationship. When it comes to our microbiomes, we have a chance to take control. We aren't doomed to develop whatever is programmed into our genes. Our microbial collaborators can influence our gene expression and, ultimately, our health. And one of the ways in which we take control is establishing the right skincare routine, one that respects, honors, nourishes, and supports the body's microscopic friends. Shift your topical treatment goals from harassing or killing scores of bacteria to supporting the health of your skin. A note about skincare brands and dermatological procedures. It is beyond the scope of this book to go into detail about all the treatments available today, whether prescriptions, over-the-counter products, or procedures performed in a dermatologist's office. What's more, technologies change rapidly. By the time you listen to this audiobook, a new drug or therapy could be on the market to address your skin issues. I recommend that you visit my website, www.drwhitneybow.com, for the latest updates to my personal recommendations and thoughts about various products and procedures. I also keep a perennial list of my preferred brands on the site, under the heading Dr. Whitney's Picks. Make it a goal to see a dermatologist once a year to be checked for skin cancer, and talk about any conditions or concerns you may have that require a dermatologist's expertise. If you implement the strategies in this book, in combination with dermatological help custom tailored to your skin, the results will be phenomenal. Many top industry leaders in both prescription-based pharmaceuticals and over-the-counter skincare have been pouring funds into R&D to find what skincare ingredients are capable of shifting the balance of bacteria on the skin in a positive direction. This requires a lot of careful study and attention to detail. First of all, they have to think about how traditional skincare ingredients affect the flora, which ingredients might kill off good bacteria, and which might promote the growth of healthy bacteria on the skin. The answer depends on what condition we are treating and where on the skin we are focusing. Armpits, face, neck, back, hands, groin. Certain bacteria like to flourish in areas where we make oil, for example, face, chest, back, whereas others like to settle into our folds and creases. This helps explain why people with certain skin conditions tend to harbor species in common. While research into skincare ingredients that take the microbiome into consideration is still underway, there are lots of options on the market today, and the selection will only get better in the future. Cleansing is no longer just about cleaning off makeup and dirt. Cleansing products are now designed to take into account how their ingredients affect the skin flora. We are all redefining what clean means. American skincare brands now understand that clean skin still has trillions of microbes creeping all over it. During my days in the microbiology research lab, I had to maintain the right temperature, humidity, and pH in order to encourage one strain of bacteria to grow while preventing another from contaminating my petri dish. I even had to put certain ingredients in the culture medium, food for the bacteria, that would selectively allow one strain to grow over another. That's where the research is now in the skincare world. As new science and its related products emerge, I will do the work for you. I'll look at the data and tell you which brands to buy and when to save your money. Rules of the skincare road. Rule number one here is to know what your skin likes and doesn't like. Everyone is different depending on her unique skin and the conditions she is trying to treat. If you are acne-prone and use benzoyl peroxide, for example, use it carefully and judge how your skin reacts to it. Benzoyl peroxide can deplete vitamin E from the skin, leaving it more vulnerable to inflammation. The chemical may also kill some of your good bacteria, so I'm a big fan of following any products containing benzoyl peroxide with an antioxidant serum, then layering a probiotic moisturizer on top of that. I believe in encouraging a healthy balance in your skin every day through a proactive approach. Every time you do something to help your skin, it's an opportunity to shift that balance in your favor. There are no shortcuts here. It's a daily commitment, like eating as many sources of probiotics as you can and scheduling time to relax or exercise. Sometimes you have to change your strategy based on the way your skin is behaving. It will change what it likes as you age in general and throughout the year. Your bacteria have a variety of needs depending on what time of year it is, how much you are traveling, what the weather is like, what kind of water you are exposing it to, and the messages and signals it's getting from within the body. You have to respond to those needs, and your response will vary, and should vary, throughout the year. Furthermore, no one size fits all. What works for your friend might not work for you. In other words, listen to your skin. Remember to treat your face, neck, and chest as one cosmetic unit. Most products we use on our faces should also be applied to the neck and chest, especially sunscreen, antioxidant serum, and masks. I can't tell you how many patients neglect their necks and chests and one day realize that these areas give away their ages. A note about serums. Antioxidant serums are important, but often overlooked. They're a crucial supplement to the protection sunscreen offers from the free radicals contained in UV rays. Antioxidants are also key for fighting infrared damage and pollution. As you know by now, studies show that, like UV rays, infrared radiation can cause DNA damage and wrinkles. Indeed, the sun gives off half its energy in the form of infrared light. You can't see it, but you can feel it. Infrared exposure damages skin through heat. And it's not just coming from the sun. Infrared radiation can also be found in artificial heating devices, such as cold weather outdoor heating units, food warmers in kitchens, hot yoga studios, some hair dryers, and electric radiant heaters. These devices are also often found in industrial settings, especially where glass and paper are manufactured, where molten metal is used for welding, and where textiles are produced. Some glassblowers and professional bakers show signs of premature aging on their arms because of constant heat exposure. As I'll suggest in Chapter 10, you might want to have two types of serums, one for the morning and another for the evening. Each one will contain slightly different ingredients. There will be more UV-combating ingredients in the daytime serum and more retinol in your nighttime serum. Serums are not heavy and moisturizing, as your daytime moisturizer or nighttime face cream should be. Rather, serums are light, fast-absorbing, and packed with potent ingredients that provide your skin with lasting, long-term benefits. Because they are not weighed down by the types of ingredients that make moisturizers and night creams so hydrating, serums are able to quickly and deeply penetrate your skin in order to deliver their high concentration of active ingredients. They are the powerhouses of any skincare line. While serums tend to be expensive because of their ingredients, especially if you buy them in upscale department stores, a little bit goes a long way, so this product will last you a good amount of time. Less expensive serums with high-quality ingredients are now finding their way into stores such as Target, Walgreens, and CVS. Don't judge a serum by its retail cover. Rules for sun protection. In terms of topical regimens, using a sunscreen is the single most important thing you can do for your skin. The skin has an amazing capacity to renew itself, if you give it the right tools. The ingredients in sunscreen block out beauty-busting UV damage, and by blocking out environmental stressors, you're giving your skin a chance to renew itself. One 2016 study found that a single application of a broad-spectrum SPF 30 facial sunscreen daily for 1 year reversed UV damage on the face. Specifically, study participants saw improvements of 52% in mottled pigmentation, 40% in skin texture, and 41% in skin clarity after a year. One of the most common questions I'm asked in my office, on social media, and by my friends and family is which sunscreen I recommend. There are so many options on the market. I always say that the best sunscreen is the one you will actually use. It does not matter whether you prefer a lotion, spray, or stick. It matters that you use a broad-spectrum sunscreen every single day, ideally one that contains UV-blocking ingredients and UV-filter chemicals. You can use a sunscreen powder or a sunscreen mist throughout the day to refresh the initial application. Use a mist if your skin is dry, a powder if it's oily. I also recommend wearing a lip balm with an SPF of 30 or higher. Remember, you can always find up-to-date brand recommendations based on the latest studies on my website. When it comes to sunscreen, there are multiple factors that can make a product fail to protect your skin. Some tips. Make sure you're using enough for adequate coverage. As I always tell my patients, you need a shot glass full of sunscreen to properly cover your face and décolletage and other exposed areas, such as hands, arms, and legs. Apply it properly. This means putting it on 15 minutes before you go in the sun. Reapply every 2 hours. For a typical day at work, I recommend applying once in the morning and possibly once at lunchtime if you plan to be outside. There are many new products designed to go over your makeup. Reapply after swimming. For a full day in the sun, reapply at least every 2 hours and after swimming or sweating. Use extra precaution near water, snow, and sand because these substances reflect UV rays, increasing your chances of a sunburn. Also, always apply sunscreen when it's cloudy. 80% of the sun's rays penetrate through clouds. Use brands that pass quality assurance standards. Sometimes the packaging might not be entirely accurate. Although the Food and Drug Administration requires manufacturers to test their products, the agency doesn't do its own independent testing to verify claims. For this reason, I like to rely on studies conducted by Consumer Reports, www.consumerreports.org, which does lots of testing to verify that products work as advertised. There have been instances when a sunscreen supposed to be SPF 50 has tested as SPF 10. Don't use expired sunscreen. Check the date on your bottle. Also, if you left your sunscreen in a hot car or outside in the sun last year, throw it out. It won't work effectively anymore. Invest in your skin and buy a new bottle. Many of the best-rated options are very affordable. Think twice about natural or mineral sunscreens that contain titanium dioxide and/or zinc oxide, but don't contain any chemicals that filter UV radiation. Yes, you can burn through these, and so can your children. I reserve these for patients who have sensitivities to chemical sunscreens, which is a much rarer problem than you might think. When people break out after using a sunscreen, it's almost never because of the active chemical ingredients. Ideally, you want a sunscreen that has a combination of UV-combating ingredients. Sunscreen use is so important that if you do nothing else to your skin, this one daily practice will save you from a lot of trouble with skin conditions, especially premature aging. Rules for exfoliation. In addition to regular sunscreen use, proper exfoliation is key to combating premature aging of the skin. Alpha hydroxy acids, AHAs, also called lactic or glycolic acids, and beta hydroxy acids, BHAs, are all star performers when it comes to exfoliation. You can find these ingredients in lots of over-the-counter products, but they are also used in higher concentrations during chemical peels at the dermatologist's office. These formulations smooth skin's outer surface and speed up cellular turnover. They can also help fade brown spots, unclog pores, and smooth out fine lines over time, if used regularly. At the same time, however, they can make skin extra sensitive. If you use them too frequently, they can disrupt the skin barrier and consequently lead to inflammation that triggers skin conditions. AHAs are water-soluble and usually are derived from plant, fruit, and milk sugars. In general, AHAs are good for skin that is dry, dull, aged, uneven in tone, or damaged by the sun. BHAs, on the other hand, are oil-soluble, which is why they excel at cleaning out clogged pores. BHAs, like salicylic acid, derive from man-made sources and are good for calming down redness and inflammation because they are chemically similar to aspirin, acetylsalicylic acid, or ASA. BHAs are the ideal option if you have acne, oily skin, blackheads, blemishes, and breakouts. You can also exfoliate using products that do not contain chemicals and instead manually rub particles into the skin to slough away dead cells. Chemical exfoliation dissolves dead surface cells and debris. Manual exfoliation scrubs them away. Both methods can be irritating depending on how abrasive those manual exfoliants are and how concentrated the chemical formulas are. Of course, how often you exfoliate also factors into the equation. The more frequently you exfoliate, the higher your risk for a reaction in the form of irritated, inflamed skin. On the day before you exfoliate, you do not want to use a retinol product. Avoiding retinol will help prepare the skin for exfoliation, so it's not extra sensitive and vulnerable to irritation. Use of retinol and exfoliation together would be a double whammy that most people's skin cannot tolerate. Exfoliation is a practice that takes some experimentation. Most people can get away with exfoliating their skin once or twice a week. Everyone will have her own tolerance for various methods and formulas. The key is to find that sweet spot where the exfoliation process is not igniting inflammation. On the one hand, you're getting rid of dead cells and stimulating new cellular growth to uncover that fresh, healthy glow. But you are also walking a fine line between polishing your skin to perfection and making yourself vulnerable to irritation. You can consider a visit to a dermatologist who can apply a chemical peel tailored to your unique skin needs. Just don't have your first chemical peel or even a facial on the same day you'll be walking the red carpet or giving a public speech. Start with a peel that has the lowest concentration of chemicals and work your way up to more intensive peels. Always give your skin time to heal from any irritation. If you have never exfoliated your face before, try a gentle product to start. Avoid the word intensive on the label. Some of the strongest formulas contain mechanical and chemical exfoliants, sometimes a combination of non-abrasive microbeads or crystals and AHA or BHA. Fruit enzymes can also be a part of the mix. These work similarly to chemical exfoliants and are gentler than scrubs. First-timers should use a product that contains a single type of exfoliating ingredient, mechanical or chemical, and is designed for sensitive skin. Warning: you can get too much of a good thing. AHAs and BHAs and retinoids can do amazing things for our skin, but I view them as special treats. They cannot be used liberally every day, especially if you use them together. If applied too frequently, or at concentrations that the skin isn't ready to tolerate, they can do damage. It's just like so much of everything else in life. Moderation is the key. Otherwise, you risk an inevitable biological backlash. Sugar scrub recipe. You can exfoliate your skin twice a week, but the way you exfoliate your face, neck, and chest should be much gentler than the way you exfoliate your body, especially those rough spots such as elbows, knees, and soles of your feet. While a DIY sugar scrub is too harsh for most people's faces, I love this kind of scrub for the extra thick areas of skin on your body. My favorite recipe is made with two ingredients, brown sugar and almond oil. Simply mix half a cup of brown sugar with half a cup of almond oil and apply it to those rough spots with your hands. Remember, I strongly caution against harsh body loofahs, handheld scrubbers, and other tools intended to exfoliate. Rub gently in a circular motion for a minute or two, then rinse and pat dry before moisturizing. Note that sugar is not okay in your diet, but is perfectly fine to use as an exfoliating agent for your elbows, knees, and feet. Rules for topical probiotics. Believe it or not, the first known mention of topical probiotics therapy occurred more than 100 years ago. In 1912, initial research on topical bacteriotherapy using Lactobacillus bulgaricus to treat acne was suggested. It would be many more decades, however, before we'd understand how powerful probiotics can be when applied topically, and not just as an acne remedy, but also as a remedy for a wide variety of skin disorders. In 2013, the American Academy of Dermatology named probiotics a beauty breakthrough. Probiotics are finding their way into myriad topical products today. By the time you listen to this, topical probiotics may even be called by a new name to differentiate them from the probiotics in food and drink. Research into how they can enhance skin health and its microbiome, and which particular strains of probiotics are the most beneficial to skin, is still underway, because the ways in which they interfere with the development of, say, acne and rosacea is very complex. But there are plenty of data thus far to make a case for putting probiotics in topical products, as detailed in Chapter 5. To remind you, probiotics have repeatedly been shown to do the following when applied topically. Act as a protective shield that strengthens the skin barrier. Restore acidic skin pH, keeping bad bacteria at bay. Maintain proper balance of the skin's community of microbes. Alleviate inflammation and oxidative stress. Lessen photoaging, light-induced damage from UV radiation. Help keep skin hydrated and promote the production of collagen, fats, and ceramides. Probiotics used in topical formulas can be derived from bacteria found in or on the human body, in the skin and gut, or in our environment, such as water and soil. We are learning now which source will be the most effective for the health of skin. Following are the four categories of probiotics-based topicals we are now seeing in skincare products. Probiotics, live bacteria. Prebiotics, food for the bacteria. Postbiotics, purified small-chain fatty acids, small molecules, and metabolites made by the bacteria. Also includes heat-killed bacteria, bacterial fragments, and lysed, broken-up, bacteria. Claims you will see on products vary. Some are said to preserve or protect the microbiome and prevent skin conditions. Others are said to create shifts in the microbiome. The latter products are the ones designed to be used on unhealthy skin, to treat skin conditions, or to reverse the signs of aging. So what probiotic strains should you be looking for? Here's a cheat sheet to help you find the best kind for your particular concerns. Check my website for updates as newer science emerges. Strains shown to help with acne and rosacea. Lactobacillus plantarum. Enterococcus faecalis SL5. Streptococcus salivarius. Lactococcus SP HY449. Lactobacillus paracasei. Strains shown to help with sensitive and dry skin. Streptococcus thermophilus. Bifidobacterium longum. Strains that may slow premature aging. Bacillus coagulans. Lactobacilli strains. For example, L. plantarum. Streptococcus thermophilus. Some companies are formulating proprietary blends, and there's nothing wrong with that. Your topical probiotics may be used in combination with oral probiotics. Recall that some products will contain live cultures, whereas others will contain supernatants or extracts. Some formulations might even contain prebiotic ingredients, which encourage the growth of healthy strains by serving as food for the good bacteria already living on your skin. No one preparation has proved superior to the others as of yet. Efficacy has to do with the degree of scientific rigor each company uses to test its formulation. My Honey Avocado Yogurt Mask. A yogurt mask not only delivers probiotics naturally, it also has exfoliating powers. Yogurt contains lactic acid, which you'll recall is a natural exfoliant. That and the soothing properties of the yogurt and its live active cultures are ideal for short-term exposure. Following is one of my favorite formulations. Try it some evening right after you clean your face, but before you apply your nighttime products. More recipes for face masks are in the accompanying PDF. You'll be encouraged to try one during the program outlined in Chapter 10. Mash together half a peeled and pitted avocado and 2 teaspoons honey until the mixture has a paste-like consistency. Add 1 small container, 6 ounces, plain Greek yogurt and mix it until well combined. Spread a light coating over your face and leave it on for 10 to 20 minutes before rinsing off with warm water. Rules for retinoids. Along with basic sunscreen, retinoids are one of the most powerful, effective, and rigorously tested substances in all of dermatology. They have been around forever, and they work wonders. No matter what ingredients are trending, from caviar to snail slime to stem cells, we always seem to come back to retinoids because they truly deliver results. I recommend that my patients start using them when they're in their 30s. But if you haven't tried them yet and you're long past this age, don't panic. You can start now and still benefit from them. It can take patience and experimentation, however, to use a retinoid correctly. Many people who first try them will experience side effects that lead them to think they are allergic to retinoids or can't tolerate them somehow. This is almost never true. First, let's define what a retinoid is. The word retinoid refers to a category of ingredients that are derived from vitamin A. Among the benefits of retinoids is that they stimulate skin cell turnover, so dead cells fall off and new ones rise to the surface. In other words, retinoids are a type of exfoliant, albeit stronger than AHAs and BHAs. A good retinoid will be more effective than AHAs or BHAs at helping exfoliate dark patches and evening out the texture of the skin so it feels nice and smooth. Also, retinoids help to stimulate collagen production, which is great for fine lines and wrinkles. They can even help smooth out the appearance of scars and stretch marks. And they are great for acne. Retinoids are so universal in the treatment of skin conditions that I love recommending them to patients who suffer from a variety of issues. They can get multiple benefits from a single source. Retinoids come in both prescription and over-the-counter formulas. Retinol is the form you find in most over-the-counter products, but there are a number of generic and branded names for prescription products. Although you can find an over-the-counter retinol with a concentration as high as 2.5%, that is too strong for most first-timers. Start with a lower concentration, say 0.5%, and give your skin a few weeks to become acclimated to the retinol. Then you can try stronger formulas. Look for products packaged in tubes or jars that cannot admit air and light, which will degrade the formula. If you want to explore prescription-strength formulas, it helps to start with an OTC version first to acclimate your skin to the chemical so you won't suffer the side effects of a stronger version. The biggest mistake people make when they first start using a retinoid is to apply it every night, which is far too often for most formulations on the market today. Within a week or two, this can lead to rip-roaring retinoid dermatitis, red scaly patches that usually start around the corners of the nose and trail down to the chin, accompanied by stinging and burning sensations. In those cases, the overuse of retinoid has compromised the skin barrier and led to an inflammatory reaction. When it comes to retinoids, it is all about finding that delicate balance. You want to gently push the skin, but not overdo it. Here's the key. Start with an over-the-counter retinoid and apply it every third or fourth night. If you have super sensitive skin, you might have to start with just once weekly. Although some retinoids are photostable, meaning they won't break down in daylight, most are recommended for nighttime use. As instructed in Chapter 10, you'll apply it after you wash your face and before you apply your serum and moisturizer, unless your serum contains retinol, in which case you don't need a standalone retinol. After 2 or 3 weeks, see if your skin is doing okay. If you're not experiencing redness and your skin doesn't look or feel irritated, in other words, if there is no stinging or burning, then you can amp it up by applying the retinol more frequently. The goal is to increase your exposure over time without triggering those side effects, which themselves can end up doing long-term damage to the skin, both visibly and to its microbiome. Today, there are so many topical options available to counteract the side effects of retinoids that almost anyone can tolerate their use. I have really sensitive skin, but I can either use a prescription-strength preparation once a week, Sunday nights are my retinoid nights, or a much milder over-the-counter version 3 times a week. Most over-the-counter retinol products come with built-in ingredients to help soothe and moisturize, helping mitigate side effects to the point where you may be able to use them every night. Note, everyone will be different, and some people will not be able to tolerate daily use no matter how long they try to train their skin to do so. Whether you're using an OTC or prescription strength version, your daily serums and moisturizers will also help prevent serious side effects. Retinoids are a pan-generational therapy. They can be used during each major decade of adult life, often for different reasons at each stage, because they confer multiple benefits. They can help clear acne in your 20s, control discoloration and dark pigmentation in your 30s, strengthen collagen and reduce fine lines and wrinkles in your 40s, and help prevent precancerous changes in the skin in the 50s and beyond. A special note about generic acne products. Over time, an increasing number of branded topical prescription drugs have been replaced by generic alternatives. This is especially true when it comes to topical acne therapies. One of the most common topical acne therapies prescribed by dermatologists has been and continues to be a product containing two key ingredients, benzoyl peroxide and an antibiotic, such as clindamycin or erythromycin. When formulated by the manufacturer in a single product, the ingredients are usually well tolerated. Dermatologists will tell you that if you use topical antibiotics alone, not in combination with benzoyl peroxide, you will likely develop resistance to that antibiotic. In other words, it will stop working, and unhealthy multi-resistant bacterial strains will proliferate on your skin. If the product also contains benzoyl peroxide, however, then the resistance is much less likely to occur. But here's what happens in real life. The doctor writes the prescription, or nowadays e-prescribes it through a computer that connects with the pharmacy, and then the patient learns at the pharmacy that it's much cheaper to buy the generic versions of the topical antibiotic and benzoyl peroxide separately. Here's the problem. Generic benzoyl peroxide is notorious for irritating the skin. So once the patient experiences a reaction, for example, red, stinging, flaking skin, she will stop using that tube and keep using just the antibiotic. This is a setup for resistance and problems. You can avoid this situation by making sure you use a single product that contains both the benzoyl peroxide and the antibiotic. If your insurance won't cover that combination product, then ask for an acne prescription that is antibiotic-free. Some dermatologists avoid prescribing antibiotic-containing prescriptions altogether to skirt this issue, and there are plenty of incredibly effective antibiotic-free options available today. Rules for addressing discoloration. I don't know any person who won't have, at some point, discoloration on her skin. Whether it's caused by the side effects of pregnancy hormones, sun exposure in the past, or a genetically acquired skin disorder, discoloration can be troublesome for millions of people. The most common type of discoloration I treat is hyperpigmentation, or dark spots. There are three basic categories of hyperpigmentation: melasma, lentigo, and post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. Melasma is characterized by dark brown or gray-brown patches of skin on the cheeks, forehead, nose, or chin. The two primary causes of melasma are sun exposure and hormonal shifts, such as those that occur during pregnancy. A lentigo is a pigmented flat spot that is darker than the surrounding skin and, unlike a freckle, does not fade away during the winter months. This type of hyperpigmentation may be caused by genetics and/or sun exposure. They are often called liver spots, but have nothing to do with the liver. Post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation, or PIH, is caused when inflammation occurs in the skin and leaves a stain after it resolves. For example, if you find yourself living with a brown mark that lasts for weeks or months after an acne blemish disappears, you struggle with PIH. Those marks are often much more distressing than the acne itself. There are lots of skin brightening products on the market today, many of which contain fruit enzymes to exfoliate dead skin and purge existing pigment. The most popular and effective ingredient is hydroquinone. I advise using hydroquinone only under the supervision of a dermatologist. When you use a product that contains more than a certain percentage of hydroquinone or use it for too long, it can, paradoxically, cause more pigmentation problems. So look for a hydroquinone-free formula that contains brighteners such as licorice, soy, marine extracts, kojic acid, or niacinamide, and use it every day, applying it at night after you wash your face and before you apply anything else. Make sure to follow strict sun protection guidelines while you're using these creams, because even a small amount of sun exposure can negate all the progress you are making with the brightening formulation and make it appear as though the spots are going nowhere. If you don't find that it works for you within 8 to 12 weeks, see a dermatologist. Rules for buying into trends. As I write this, a procedure called microneedling is making headlines. During microneedling, also called collagen induction therapy, or the vampire facial, when combined with your own serum, a dermatologist uses tiny needles to create a microscopic tic-tac-toe board of controlled wounds to the skin. Your body reacts by naturally healing your skin and, in the process, building new collagen and elastin in the dermis. More collagen equals younger, firmer skin. It is ideal for tightening and lifting the skin, as well as for minimizing acne scars, smoothing out pores, and countering the effects of photoaging, dull skin, poor texture, stretch marks, and body scars. It can help with fine lines and wrinkles, too. In fact, a recent study showed that medical microneedling can increase epidermal thickness by a whopping 140% while also increasing and thickening collagen bundles in the dermis. In addition, microneedling allows serums, topical gels, and creams to penetrate or infuse more deeply into your skin, rendering the products more effective. Up to 80% of a product can penetrate skin directly after microneedling, compared to a mere 7% with normal application on intact skin. Okay, I sound like an advertisement for this procedure, but here's why I chose this as an example. Inexpensive at-home microneedling devices have been marketed brilliantly lately. At this time, I don't recommend these so-called dermal rollers because they're much less precise than the device I use in the office and can even create tears in the skin. Moreover, at-home dermal rolling can be very abrasive to your skin and can spread bad bacteria, leading to very serious skin conditions. My advice is proceed with caution. Some at-home treatments are not interchangeable with the sophisticated equipment, impeccable results, and high safety standards of the procedures performed in a dermatologist's office. When a new product comes out promising amazing results, cue the Saturday morning infomercials. Do your homework and ask questions. Don't be the first guinea pig. There's a lot you can do for your skin without buying into potentially harmful trends. Rules through the decades. Entering a new decade in life is exciting. We often feel like we've reached a new milestone and anticipate that the ensuing years will bring novel adventures and unexpected rewards. A new decade can also bring its own set of challenges, especially for the body as it continues to age. This is not necessarily a bad thing, for aging is often a joyful, enriching experience. You gain more wisdom, more confidence, and more skills that make life easier to navigate. And many of us actually get more beautiful with age, even though we don't look 20 anymore. But your skin's needs will change, and to keep up with those shifting needs, you should adjust your beauty regimen accordingly. Let me give you some tips that will help you plan for your progression through the years. Indeed, you can age gracefully. 20s. Sunscreen is key. Every day, rain or shine. If you do nothing else during this decade, commit to daily sunscreen. Also, get used to using products containing antioxidants, such as vitamins C and E. Both your sunscreen and antioxidants will provide protection against free radicals. Now is the time to protect and prevent. Consider adding glycolic acid and/or salicylic acid to your routine, either in the form of at-home products, such as a pre-saturated pad that contains these ingredients. Yes, they can be used together, or by undergoing in-office light chemical peels, no downtime, 5-minute procedure. Remember, these ingredients exfoliate the skin, keeping it smooth and keeping pores unclogged. Just don't overdo exfoliation. If you suffer from acne, you may want to start trying a retinoid. 30s. Add a retinoid to your skincare routine if you haven't done so already. This is the decade when you'll start to see fine lines form and perhaps struggle with adult acne. This is also a great time to ask your dermatologist for laser treatments, such as microneedling, that keep skin tight, lifted, smooth, and healthy. The doctor might also use resurfacing lasers and non-invasive tightening devices that employ ultrasound and radiofrequency waves. These devices will boost your collagen production, and the more collagen reserves you start off with, the better prepared you are for the future. It's like filling up your tank with premium gas before embarking on a long road trip. If you're proactive, you might start using botulinum toxins in your 30s to prevent facial lines from getting etched in over time. 40s. Try amping up your retinoid use by either using it every night if you don't already do so, or asking your dermatologist for a prescription-strength formula, if you don't already have one. Consider adding more topical antioxidants to your regimen, both in the morning and in the evening, by switching up your serum. Look for products containing peptides, growth factors, and other collagen-boosting ingredients to keep tipping the balance in favor of collagen production over collagen destruction. Give those cells the upper hand by feeding them with collagen-boosting ingredients from the outside in. Despite their best efforts with at-home skincare, though, many women begin to use dermatologist-administered fillers in their 40s. Fat pads are falling down and in as a result of gravity, creating the dreaded jowl, loss of definition along the jawline. Eyes can look tired because fat pads start to pooch out. But using the right skincare at home and combining it with a few procedures in your dermatologist's office throughout the year can keep everything firm, tight, smooth, and lifted. 50s and beyond. This is the time to bring on heavier moisturizers and richer products in addition to collagen-boosting ingredients so that you can boost hydration levels in the skin. Think ceramides, hyaluronic acid, coconut oil, and dimethicone. As we age, skin loses its ability to trap moisture, so it gets dehydrated much more easily than it did in decades past. Consider layering skincare products, serum